Western players get like consumed by this, where they're like, no, we must do this thing. The meta is this. We are doing this. And I think the Korean teams tend to think outside of that, the best Korean teams, and try and find counters to the most effective meta game picks that also are most effective with the players and the color of the team and the style of the team that they have.
So, okay, I've got a great parallel to kind of extend this point further and get your thoughts on it, which is, believe it or not, one of the first people in League of Legends to, on a very simplistic level, as you'll find out when it who it is, explicate what you just said was Doublelift. And he did it in season 3. Now, this is going to blow everyone's mind right now, because that's the thing about Doublelift, right?
I mean, there's a huge amount of irony, because I feel like he never played that way.
Oh, no, this is, he didn't at all. But what's great is, right, listen, a lot of the time, especially back then, there wasn't a whole lot going on behind the eyes. The mouth was moving, the eyes were flashing a little bit, there was words coming out.
But what's great about Doublelift is I feel like sometimes he says stuff like that, and you're like, wow, that is so spot on. But he will say things, and I have extensive experience with him, and I like Peter a lot, but he will say things and you'll be like, Peter, that is really correct. Like, I'm really glad you said that and it was a smart idea. But the problem comes when it actually has to be applied. He is unable to apply these concepts to himself hardly ever. So it's really weird that he has these epiphanies and he can talk about the game or talk about philosophies behind the game so well, but be totally incapable, not totally, that's probably unfair, but somewhat incapable of implementing them into his actual team or his practice.
If I'd come to you in season 3 and told you, Monty, you know what? Mad Life, Dandy, these players are all going to come to Piglet. They're all going to come to the West, Monty. They're going to play in NA LCS or NA Challenger. That would be a very exciting prospect, right? What do you think about the fact that these players have come? They're never as good, if you notice, pretty much almost across the board. It's very rare they're ever as good as they were in Korea. Does it tell us something different about Koreans that, you know, once they step outside of that zone, maybe there's an aura effect around Seoul. I don't know, but they lose the magic,
skill,
right?
Maybe the skill vampires are just locked in the Western countries, right? I think that it's hard because I think the way that the Korean teams think about their teammates and their coaches and the way they operate as a unit is very different than what they encounter in the Western teams. And it's true that a good team is always more than the sum of its parts. But also part of it has been that people have been poor in the West about conceptualizing players' styles and how they fit together within fit together with each other in order to make something. I think the most famous example of that is NRG. Right. Where you look at that roster and you're sort of like, okay, well, this didn't work because the players' styles they just don't operate well together. And they got relegated despite having a huge amount of funding behind them that never should have happened. I think people tend to like go out and get the star names and don't think about how to integrate their talents or their particular strengths and weaknesses well within the rest of the roster.
So I remember at Katowice, this tournament, it was one of those settings where you guys made it to the final and then the other semi-final was Nip Envious. And obviously, you know, for the storyline, everyone would have wanted Envious to make it there because, you know, you two were the two battling like for number one title, etc. But in the end, it was Nip and it ended up being an amazing final. Actually, this was, I think, one of the best finals we had. What did you think about that one? Because here's the thing, right? You told me that Fnatic should have won the other one. You should have won the Cologne one that Nip won, right? The Nip fans, the Nip players even, all tell me it's the other way around. Like, this is the one they should have won. They think they should have won this final. What do you think?
Is it the one where...
Where Ali shoots through the guy on Dust 2, yes. They're all triggered about that. They still talk about it to this day.
I think the CSGO gods were with us that day. I saw the clips. The bullets go through, but what can I do? The game decides. They should have won Dust 2 and maybe they would have won the match by winning Dust 2, but what can I say? History is history.
Okay. What do you think at the moment is the problem with Swedish CS in general? Like right now, sure, your team's doing really well online and people hope that you can be better, you know, but at the moment, there's no Swedish team in most of top tens in the world. You know, it's been quite a while since the Swedish team won a big tournament. You know, before this was never a problem. Every year of Counter-Strike, every year pretty much, you know, either the best team is Swedish or if not the best, then, you know, like the second and third are. There's always been all these great teams. Why has Swedish CS kind of fallen off, do you think?
It's a really hard question. Like, for us in Fnatic, it was like, it was the hunger to win. Like, that's why we brought along Golden and Lecro, because it's two guys that's never won anything. And they're gonna bring the motivation with them, and it's gonna spread to the rest of us. And I think maybe that's a bit what was lacking before, and I know in NIP what's lacking there, but it feels like they never renew their game either. Like they play the same style, even though Threat gives input and comes with some good rounds. They never like change the way they play. Even on practice, it's like, I'm not gonna say like it just doesn't feel like they're trying to practice in practice games.
But I remember even when you were winning, I used to look and be like, this guy isn't even vaguely the best top player. Like, I don't even, it almost looked like he didn't have any strategy. Like, he just pushed 24/7 and he thinks he's the best player and he's just going to try and win every single matchup. And then here's the thing though, as the Westerners now, the way we've rationalized it is, again, we've kind of like been favorable to him. We almost think like it was a strategy. Like, oh, he knew that if he pushed top all the time, he would like alleviate pressure off the mid lane and then the jungler would never be going mid lane. So Alex was safe. Like, it sounds really cool when he said it like that. But what was Darien like? What was his plan in League of Legends? What did he think he was doing?
I think actually that was kind of true, that he was understanding that the pressure he applies on the top lane translates to the whole map, but he was not like clearly understanding it like you're saying, like this consequences out of each other. But he was more like, if I push this way first, it will give my team an advantage. So he was always sticking to it and trying to roam or trying to pressure the jungler or trying some crazy stuff like that. And yes, he was maybe like not the best top laner of all the time he played, but most of the time he was like really flexible. He could destroy his lanes 1v1 even against Koreans, and like he was just a monster when he had motivation to. And the most amazing thing was that he could basically play any champion at any given time. Like he didn't even need to practice it before. You just like ask Darien, this champion might fit this composition very well, do you want to play it? He's like, yeah, it's easy. Some Cassiopeia, like really easy champion, I will play her. Or Lissandra maybe, not big problem. Just give it to me. And he was just like winning games by picking those champs in the right time, even though he didn't have a single game of practice in the past 2 months on this champ. So yeah, he's definitely something really mysterious.
So okay, in your past teams, were you someone who does someone else shot call and you just take direction from them? Like, are you someone where you want your laner to tell you to come and do the gank, or do you set up the gank? What is your philosophy in that way?
Right now or back then?
In the past. Just in the past. Career.
I think I myself was finding a lot of opportunities to gank, especially like, but as you mentioned before, I was mostly a top lane ganker, you know, so yeah. I was ganking like 80% of time top on my own, 20% of time mid. Like, I regret that I didn't understand how the mid lane works back then. If I would understand it, I would gank mid maybe even more than top lane, because pressure from mid lane can be translated to top dives and stuff like that. And it would give me like so much free wins against so many teams. But the thing that I was lacking a lot is like ability to understand when I can gank bot. And that's what Edward actually was helping me a lot, especially when he was playing trash. So when he was playing trash and when he saw the kill opportunity on bot, he was just like, come bot, I'm sure we can kill. At first I was like, no, I don't see how we can kill them. But he was really, how to say, he was really forcing me to do that. So I tried a couple of times and it worked every time great. So I kind of listened to him a lot in these terms, and he was the person which was helping me in the team of like providing ganks to the bottom lane, kinda. And yeah, especially when he was playing trash and I was playing something like Volibear or Nasus, just like lantern 3 kill. It was great. I'm really glad that some other players from my team were covering the issues that I had as a player.
So I always point this out in CSGO, because obviously in CSGO people think of you primarily as an in-game leader, but I always said this in 1.6 that you were basically, because you were a young player and you're in these teams with players like Bit, you were just like an AWPer, you were a star player, someone who people expect you to put frags up. How good actually do you think you were in 1.6 of the AWP?
I think when I was younger, I was definitely better skill-wise than I am right now, because I think I didn't think too much to play. I was just this guy with a high sense who would go anywhere and kill anywhere, doesn't matter where. So I remember even when I practiced and I had some opportunities to play Markelov in a couple of tournaments, we had Markelov as one of the best at the moment, and I was able to go frag-wise and skill-wise very close to him and really kill him sometimes during practice and tournaments, and that for me represented that I was good skill-wise.
Source was always like in the background, and I noticed there was like different periods of time where you played it. You made a now infamous statement in an interview, which at the time was like blasphemy for me.
Yeah, I can't believe you said this.
The statement you said was, you said CS Source was more tactical than 1.6. And here's the thing, no matter what people thought about either game, that's one thing that all the 1.6 players definitely thought they had, was like, I was just, you know, the more superior game and tactically in-depth. What did you mean by that comment? Like on its face value, do you still stand by it? Is there some more like nuance we need to understand about it?
I still stand by it, and I think CSGO kind of proved my point, because CSGO is a better version of CS Source, in my opinion. It's not a better version of CS 1.6. So 1.6 was way cooler to play. It was a better game, definitely. But when it came to strategies, it was pretty much run and gun, you know. You can see, like, it's super difficult to see on CSGO, for example, one player to be able to really kill a game or multiple kills every single time. It's much easier to trade in CSGO. And I just think that players like Neil, for example, they can use their movement skills to be able to get away with unreal situations and do crazy plays. Nowadays, you don't have those same things in CSGO, in my opinion. It's much more balanced. And the fact on CS Source that you could use nades through roofs, like through sides, to one to the other, and stuff like that, for me, you'd made the game more strategical. So that's what my point at the time. But of course, I was bashing hardly after I said that. And I regret saying it, because...
Yeah, people didn't appreciate it, that's for sure. So what was it true though? I mean, you said there, like, the thing about the streaming network thing. Was it true that the reason you made it called Team Solo Mid, though, was... Like, I heard some legend that, you know, it was that you really were like, it's my team and I'm the mid, so it's going to be all based around me. Was it as extreme as that? What was the reason for coming up with the name?
Yeah, so the reason why I made TSM was because I just wanted to shit on CLG. So that was the reason why. Okay. The reason why...
You did a good job over history, I guess.
You're right, I did. My one goal, I'm a really focused person. So every single time I focus on something, I did a good job at it. But the reason why it's named Team Solo Mid was because our website was named solomid.net. And so it was just naturally really easy to name the team Solo Mid. I didn't really put that much thought into it because I was like 18. And... in retrospect, it's a pretty dumb name if you think about it, right? Like, yeah. Why would you put team in a team name? If you're already a team, it's redundant to call it Team Solo Mid. So in theory, I should have just called it Solo Mid. But at the end of the day, it all worked out because TSM chants are amazing, and it sounds great. TSM sounds great. So I really lucked out with that. But we're focused on rebranding to just purely TSM, because we're more than just a MOBA team.
Yes.
But... yeah, we really lucked out with that. The website was named solomid.net was because I played middle, and I played middle every single game for most of my career, so I just named it solomid.net, and that's where I created most of my guides on.
Was when TSM started to get these sponsors, etc. Afterwards, when he went to Cloud9, even though he technically wasn't in TSM anymore, Cloud9, I noticed, often had the same sponsors. They often were still very close with TSM. It looked like there was a lot of similarity, right? Some people who don't like Reginald are going to hate on you, and they're going to say, Jack secretly sort of like, he got Reggie all those sponsors and the money, and he kind of like must have helped Reggie along the way, because, you know, I mean, you don't have a degree in business or whatever, you know. Is there any truth to that? What kind of role did Jack play in TSM and in your career?
He played a huge role, right? Like, the thing is that those people are just salty. You don't really accomplish anything in life without other people around you, without having a good support system. Like, no one becomes successful, or no one does anything on their own. Like, name one person that actually becomes truly successful on their own. Athletes, right? They need good coaches. They need a good support environment. They need a good family. They need someone there to help them emotionally, wherever it is, whoever it is, right? You can always point to someone that's helped you out. For me, sure, I wasn't good at that, but was I able to befriend someone that helped me get there? Yes. And Jack has been such a big part of my life to help me grow as a person, to help me grow as a business professional. Dude, he can have all the credit. I don't care. Jack has been so helpful in my career. And yes, he did help me there. Did I put in effort? Did I put in work? Did I contribute? Yes, I absolutely did. But I would not be where I'm at without my players, without especially Chaos, Bjergsen, my brother, pretty much Jack. Everyone around me, really, like Riot Games, like all the publishers, the fans, you know? So, I get that.
To paraphrase the legendary DMX, I just love when y'all in my Patreon crew give me a bigger piece of cake to chew a hole through. Because obviously, one of the ways I'm able to support myself and make content like I do on this channel is thanks to my Patreon community and the likes of Ahmed Haju, Frisky, Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Animosity, Jensen Gore, Tobias Bernasconi, Tosh, Toucan, and always, always a special thanks goes out to my main man, Jerky's Minion. Do you want to ask a question in my video AMA? Do you want to suggest a topic or a guest to interview? Maybe you want teasers, find out who I've already interviewed in upcoming episodes. Or do you want to take part in one of those lengthy online discussions that I do with my top patrons? Well, if any of these perks or more appeal to you, then put your money where your mouth is and join the Skrilluminati today via the Patreon link below.